So just before we start, Hillary is standing by with Twitter pulled up on her phone. So for any of y'all who have your phones with you, be sure to pull up the Twitter and tweet us at Hoco Richmond.
Yes.
Hoco Richmond. Any questions you might have throughout the sermon. And at the end of it, Hillary will give me a couple questions and I'll respond to them for you. Oh, yeah. So this morning, I'd like to paint a picture for you. So I want you to close your eyes and just let it appear as it comes. Imagine a world where poverty is non-existent, where wealth is shared equally among everyone. Imagine a world where hate, prejudice, and discrimination do not exist. Rather, the world is based on love, compassion, and equality. Imagine a world where any couple can show signs of affections in public without fear, where people are not looked down upon based on the color of their skin, seen as subhuman because they are a different sex or gender, where violence does not occur. Imagine a world where there is no such thing as power, greed, and privilege, only community, friendship, and humbleness. In this world, there is no belittling of others, only understanding, no destruction of creation, only its care. Do you like what you see? You can open your eyes now. Look around. If we like what we see so much, why doesn't this world exist? Today's story in Genesis centers around this ideal world, though it may not seem so on the surface. Now, we all know the story of Joseph and his rainbow-colored coat. We know it so well that we can tell it from our memories without blinking an eye, you know, give or take a few details. However, our familiarity with this story and our complacency with how it has been popularly interpreted has blinded us to the message that it presents. In many circles, this is a story of family dysfunction, dealing with arrogance and jealousy. While all of this is true, there is another way to understand this story. And it just so happens to come from the portion that we did not read this morning. As we read it this morning, we might have missed the opportunity to reflect on the part of Joseph having dreams. These dreams inspire much of the frustration and jealousy that is shown by his brothers towards Joseph. In one of the dreams, Joseph and his brothers are in the fields, harvesting sheaves, when all of a sudden, Joseph's sheaf stands up, and all the sheaves that are carried by his brothers are bowing down to it. And then in the second dream that Joseph has, he is surrounded by the sun, the moon, and 11 stars, all bowing down to him. Now, we all have had weird dreams before in our life. So what makes these two dreams so special enough to inspire such jealousy and hatred in his brothers? What about them made the brothers feel that they were justified in selling their own brother into slavery? I mean, my sister's had some weird dreams before in her life, but you didn't see me selling her off to the neighbor. What makes these dreams special is that they were sent to Joseph. Through Joseph, God saw an opportunity that could potentially change the world. These dreams were no ordinary dreams. They offered Joseph, his family, his community, and the observers of this tale, including us here today, a glimpse of the world that God desires us to actively pursue. Some of you may be asking how these dreams relay such a message. Let me help you dissect that. Let's look at the dream, shall we? The first thing to note about this story is to look at the family itself. It is a typical family structure, one that we still have for the most part today. At the top of the family pyramid, we have our parents, who stand in absolute authority. It is very untraditional to question the wisdom of your parents and the choices that they make, because we are raised to believe that parents know best. And why not? They have the experience. They've lived life far longer than we have. Then coming down from the top of the pyramid, we have our siblings, ranging from eldest to youngest, each having more authority over the other. And then, of course, at the bottom of the family pyramid is the youngest child, the baby, who is seen as having little to no authority and barely any knowledge of the world that they live in. Looking at this social structure, it becomes clear how the youngest of the family, Joseph, could be seen as arrogant by having these dreams. How could the youngest of the family know more about the world than the oldest? Impossible, right? However, this is still a surface-level reading of this story. We must go deeper. Let's take this family pyramid we just looked at and replace it with new groups. Imagine at the top of the pyramid our own social structures that we find in today's society. At the top, we can put white heterosexual males and females who are wealthy, extremely wealthy, have tons of power, prestige, and are privileged every single day of their lives. Then coming down from that level, we will still find white heterosexual males and females who aren't Bill Gates, but they are well off, still with loads of privilege. Following these two groups, the sections of the pyramid can be moved around some, but would generally have people with lighter skin tones near the top and darker skin tones near the bottom, heterosexuals on top, homosexuals, transsexuals, and queers on the bottom. We would see that men generally rise to the top of this pyramid, while women are left to populate the bottom rungs. We would also notice that people of a certain faith or from a particular economic class or culture are closer to the top or bottom, depending on what is valued by a particular society. Do you see what is being painted here? The structure of Joseph's family from our story can be used to see how our overall society has been structured for centuries. With this image, we can see who is clearly on the bottom, viewed as not worthy of authority or wisdom. The only thing that might be attributed to such individuals are negative attributes, ones that deprive those individuals of their humanity. So, with this structure in mind, how might we interpret the father's loving nature towards Joseph and his dreams? Think of the dreams, of how they completely disregarded the traditional order of power and authority, flipping it upside down. Through this picture, Joseph is having dreams of a society where the current world order is destroyed and replaced. These dreams show a world where the very least of our society are lifted high, placed on equal footing with the highest of our society. The anger and jealousy of the brothers is better understood now, isn't it? Don't we do the same thing in our lives? When someone who we perceive is under our authority usurps it and becomes equal or greater to us, are we not jealous and angry about that? Of course we are. We're human. However, does that justify our belittling and violent actions against those individuals? Of course it doesn't. Nothing can justify that, because this system that we live in has never been justifiable. The traditional system of power, greed, privilege, and pushing people down was never part of God's plan. That was our plan, our flawed, imperfect plan. So what about the father then? Under this system, he has the most power and authority in the family, in his society. But he cherishes and honors Joseph above all of his other sons. Why do you think that is? Perhaps the father represents God, expressing love towards the individual who strives to bring about the original plan of creation. Or perhaps the father is a fellow dreamer, a person who sees a better world in his mind, but did not act upon those dreams because he was afraid. We all know how fear can cause us to freeze in our tracks, to stop us from doing what we know is right, to give up because the future is just too scary and uncertain. And we see this today in our gospel reading. We find our disciples on a boat in the middle of a great storm when, across the water, they see Jesus walking towards them. Now, I think I can speak for most of us when I say this. If we were in a boat in the middle of a storm and we saw a person walking towards us on the water, we would be freaking out, wouldn't we? I know I would. By our understanding of the world and how it works and operates, we know that it is impossible to walk on water. So of course, we would be fearful to see what we perceive to know as a fact proven wrong. We would become paralyzed by our fear, by seeing what we did not believe is possible as possible. Yet, there's always an individual in the group who can look past their fears and what they think they know, enabling them to see the world in a different light. For the disciples, this is Peter. Instead of cowering in fear, Peter asks Jesus to command him to come out onto the water. Now, how many of us would actually like to try that one out? Peter looked beyond his fear to attempt to live life in a way that was once thought impossible. Yet, as our story shows us, even Peter, as strong and courageous as he is, succumbs to his own fears and begins to sink. Lucky for Peter and for us, God is there to save us, to give us light in our fear and in our darkness. Yet, even in that salvation, God asks us, "You of little faith, why do you doubt?" Great question, isn't it? Why do we doubt? If we profess the belief that through God all things are possible, why do we doubt? Why do we let our fears and what we perceive to know stop us from working towards the dream of a heavenly world here on earth? Not all of us are held down by this fear. Look at the great visionaries and leaders that we so often talk about and revere. Do you think that Martin Luther would have been able to open Christendom to new ways of interpretation if he had been stopped by fear? Would Harriet Tubman have been able to save the lives of thousands of slaves if she had let her fear get the best of her? How would Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton begin a movement that would work to free women from the bonds of patriarchy if they were stopped by the things they were afraid of? Could Mahatma Gandhi have been able to free India from colonial imperialism if he thought the world could not be changed? And if the world cannot be changed, why then did individuals such as Dr. Martin Luther King, Harvey Milk, and Mina Keshwar Kamal give their lives so that equality could be for all people? We all have dreams. We all dream of the day when the world is a better place, where God's understanding of creation reigns on earth, not a human one. What stops us from achieving that dream is our fears of the unknown, our fear that the dream is impossible. Yet we find strength in the story of Joseph, in the story of society's least, who do not let their fears stop them from seeking out a world that is better than what it is. We find solace in God's presence with us, in the dreams that God has placed into our hearts, into our minds. We can learn from the lives of thousands of individuals who did not let fear hinder them in reaching for that dream. A better world is possible. A world where justice, mercy, kindness, equality, love, compassion, and forgiveness can be created, but only if we look past our fears and what we think we know. God calls us to be an integral part of that world's creation. Will you let fear stop you from making that dream a reality? In the name of our just and loving Lord, who lifts the lowest to the highest places and offers us a dream to better creation, Amen.